Good afternoon. It's 12:07. This is Midday Matters Financial Focus on WBOI. I'm Sean Beter. Very glad to be with you on this, well, rather dreary Tuesday afternoon. Looking at more showers yet this afternoon, I'm hearing.
Yes, that... I should let you introduce me, but that was quite a thunderstorm this morning.
It woke me up, actually. So, with that voice you just heard, of course, it's Susan Burns back with us once again in the co-anchor chair. Susan, thanks very much for being here.
Thanks, Sean. You just make it so comfortable here.
Oh.
I'm glad. And we've got a couple guests to talk to us about a topic that we haven't ever touched on before, the world of new methods of finding funding, as you've mentioned earlier in the show.
That's right. We're talking Kiva, Kickstarter, and so much more. And we want to know if you've used these services, either as perhaps a funder or an investor, or maybe you've fundraised yourself using these methods. How did it go? What were the benefits? Were there drawbacks to those as well? Give us a call and share your thoughts. 260-452-1185 or toll free at 800-471-9264. You can always email us middaymatters@nipr.fm, post on our Facebook wall, or send us a tweet.
And our guests today are Tom Butler, who describes himself as an early adopter of Kiva. And then we also have joining us Aaron Brown from the Impact 52 Project. Hi, guys.
Hi. Thanks for having us.
Thanks. And so let's just kick this off and dive right in, Tom, with when we talk about Kiva, you know, it's got some other meanings in the Native American cultures. But when it comes to microlending, what are we talking about with Kiva?
Well, Kiva has been around since 2005. It was started by a couple of people who were in school, listened to a presentation on microlending, got excited about it, and decided to do something more than just, hey, that was a really cool presentation. They decided they'd go out and start this microlending thing. Now, this is back in 2005. And what made this sort of possible is something called the internet, because the idea of providing funding where you have to raise thousands, tens of thousands of dollars at a time is a little daunting and is kind of reserved for banks and credit unions and things like that, right?
Right.
Well, they thought, well, what if we went to the public and said, you know, we have people out there that are in need of our help. Uh-huh. They need financing. Would you be willing to provide $25?
That is micro.
Right. And so they came up with this idea of making it personal, too, so that they would get someone that would need money, and they would describe what they were going to use the money for. And they would put that up on their website, and then people would come in. Maybe they would need, and we're talking about this on an international basis. So they would come into the website, read the types of things that the people were seeking, and then they would provide $25. They really didn't want people to give hundreds of dollars at a time. They really wanted lots of $25 contributions. Mm-hmm. So if they were trying to raise $400, for instance, well, they did it $25 at a time.
And so you're basically going to this basically pre-registered pool of investors who have said, you know, I might be willing to help fund a project or help fund many projects, $25, $50 at a time. And as you kind of alluded to there, when we're talking about these individual projects, they are very often on the other side of the world sometimes.
They are, very much.
And it's not actually that much money when we think about maybe comparable projects here in the United States.
Precisely. Typically, these projects are in terms of hundreds of dollars. seldom do you see anything that's over maybe a couple of $1,000s. But they have huge impacts on the people that are receiving them. And I was attracted to this primarily because I've worked for a long time looking for creating the concept of equality between men and women. And that mm-hmm. disparity, the large disparity, exists in an economic context. And so women are typically disadvantaged. They're oppressed as a result of that economic disadvantage. They don't really have any way out of it. I mean, if you turn to a, quote, lender in their country, mm-hmm. they would, you know, yes, we'll give you $100, and you have to pay us back $3,000. Hmm. You know, so there just wasn't any path for that. Mm-hmm. And what Kiva did is they not only provided the core group of lending, the funding for this, but they also connected with partners in those countries. So they have lending partners in the country, and Kiva works with those lending partners. Yeah. And it's amazing. I'll just give you some statistics. You think you can't do much. Okay, it's just $25. What can $25 do? Well, right now, as I just pulled these statistics off the internet, right now there's over 900,000 Kiva lenders. They've made over $418 million in loans, and the repayment rate on those loans has been 99%. They work with 191 field partners. They have 450 volunteers around the world, and they've done this in 67 countries.
Wow.
I personally have been involved in this since 2006, and I've made 263 loans in that time to mostly women in 44 different countries. You really can make a difference. And there was a book that was actually written a few years ago called Half the Sky. And it tells the impact of what happens when these micro-lending institutions can provide funding to women in these countries and how it changes their lives so dramatically. So it's very, very exciting.
And I believe there is a PBS series by that name as well that aired not so long ago. So what we've talked about so far is doing good and doing good in what is a relatively low impact way for the investor, for you or me or Susan or whoever's getting involved in this. But it is lending, and there is theoretically a return on these loans. Can you talk a little bit about this? I mean, you're not going to get into this necessarily to get rich, but there is a return.
Right. Now, the Kiva organization was set up differently. Hmm. Kiva is set up, they are the people that basically create the pot of money that then goes off to their micro-lending institutions that are located in the countries. Kiva, when I put money in, I don't get interest on it.
Yeah.
So I put my money in there, and when as the money comes back out, as it's repaid, I can choose to pull it out of Kiva, or I can say, well, I'm going to turn this right back around. Mm. The micro-lending institutions in the countries, the partners in that, they do make interest on the loans that they're making, and that's how they do it. Kiva is basically a non-profit organization. Now, there are different kinds of micro-lending institutions out there. Kiva is just a institution that decided to be non-profit. Let's collect the money up. Let's get people excited. Let's get people focused on doing this activity. Let's link up with these other institutions in the countries, and that's what our function is.
And I guess I'll mention here that I guess part of my confusion on that point is there microlending has, especially online, has really exploded. There are any number of organizations that do similar work. Some I think with some returns, and
that is correct,
and some without. Yeah.
Yes, and I mean there is also Heifer International is one example. Is they in a sense, you're buying beef on the hoof. So you're providing cows and your pigs and chickens into places. And as a result of providing that, they build up chicken herds.
Sure. there's a lot you can do with one animal. Yeah,
exactly. And in that particular case, it's interesting because the interest that has to be paid by the person that's provided with the whatever it is, the cow, the pig, the chicken, is that downstream they have to provide a cow, a chicken, or something back to somebody else that's in their village or is in their town. Mm-hmm. So there's all kinds. This is a very, it's a very inventive way of elevating people up. And it's amazing what a very, very small investment into a community can do.
And I want to talk a little bit more about that a bit later on in the program here. But Aaron Brown, I want to turn to you and your experience. The reason we invited you here, your experience was a little different. You actually used a site called Kickstarter, which a lot of folks have been doing the last few years, including now many public radio programs very right. successfully to raise money in kind of a similar way. Tell us about your Kickstarter project and your experience with the service.
Okay. Well, I had written a children's book called Lenny May's New Friends, centered around volunteerism and the power of giving, mm-hmm. based off of our personal experiences of volunteering as a family with our Impact 52 project. We've been developing an ebook for iPad, for Kindle, but to have a true impact with that story, we know that we need to get it in the hands of children. Being that this is a family project, we're not a nonprofit. You know, we are a family. So in order to make that happen, we needed to find a way to generate funds. So we reached out to Kickstarter. Kickstarter is a crowdsourcing platform for creative type projects, books. A lot of musicians do their first albums are using Kickstarter, you know, art projects. Really not something for a cause, but more for a product. So we reached out and thought, you know, Kickstarter would be a good way for us to do that. I mean, our book is about community. Mm-hmm. What better way to fund this book than to get community support through crowdsourcing?
And you had a goal, had a dollar goal that you said, and the way Kickstarter works, if you don't meet that goal, if enough folks don't find your site and give money, then you don't get any of that money. Is that right?
That's correct. Kickstarter is an all or none platform. Mm-hmm. So our goal was to raise $5,000. If we would have raised $4,995, we would have received zero.
Mm. All right.
Once you achieve your target of $5,000, then you know everything over and above that, you know, we are entitled to. So we finished our project at 105%. We raised just over $5,200, which will go back to cover the printing and the distribution cost to get as many copies of our book printed as possible.
We're talking about crowdsourcing fundraising today on Midday Matters Financial Focus, and we want to know about your experience. If you've been a lender, if you've been a fundraiser on Kiva or Kickstarter or any number of these services that have sprung up, especially online, we want to hear about your experience. And if you have any advice to share, we'd love to hear that too. 260-452-1185 is the number if you have a question or comment for our panel today. You can always email us, middaymatters@nipr.fm, post on our Facebook wall, or send us a tweet at Midday Matters. We do need to take just a quick break. We'll continue the conversation when we return. Stay with us.
The next Fresh Air, the new Christian evangelical adoption movement that promotes adoption as a way of fulfilling a biblical mandate. It's sending tens of thousands of evangelicals overseas to adopt, but the children aren't always really orphans. We'll talk with Catherine Joyce about her new book, The Child Catchers, Rescue, Trafficking, and the New Gospel. Join us this afternoon at 1 here on WBOI.
In Northeast Indiana, more than 500 people are homeless. But behind the numbers, there's a story.
My mom cried when we had to go to the food bank. As a little girl, I didn't know why that was so upsetting.
Join us April 15th through the 19th as we partner with the Facing Project to tell five stories of struggle, survival, and hope from Allen County's homeless population. That's the Facing Project at 7:30 during Morning Edition and during All Things Considered at 5:30 here on WBOI.
Support for this program on WBOI is provided by Indiana Tech Law School, opening in Fort Wayne, August 2013. Information on admissions and curriculum online at indianatech.com. tech.edu/law or 855-TECH-LAW. Support for this program on WBOI is provided by United Way of Allen County, helping kids succeed in school with 15 education network partners, offering ways to mentor or tutor a child. UWEducationNetwork.org.
It's Midday Matters on WBOI Fort Wayne. I'm Sean Beter, along with Susan Burns. And Susan, we've got an exciting topic and some exciting guests with us today.
We do. We're talking today about microlending and how that's been affected by this little thing called the internet that has changed a whole lot of different paradigms. And access to startup funds is one of those areas that is entirely different these days using the internet.
That's right. And we want to hear your experience. If you've crowdsourced for a project or for a cause, or if you've been a lender in services like Kiva, or maybe you've given to a Kickstarter campaign, give us a call and share your experience with us. We'd love to hear your advice and your stories as well. 260-452-1185. Toll free at 800-471-9264. Of course, you can always post on our Facebook wall, send us a tweet at Midday Matters, or you can email us, middaymatters@nipr.fm. Aaron Brown, we were talking just before the break about your Kickstarter project and that it was a successful one. Right. And congratulations on that.
Thank you very much.
I was corrected in the last portion of the program. We were talking about Kiva and how there's not a physical return or monetary return necessarily to the lender. But in your case, and with a lot of Kickstarter campaigns, you did offer incentives to get people to open their digital wallets.
Absolutely. We created rewards based on the different levels. So if someone donated $5 to the project, you know, they could get a bookmark that has the main character from our book on it. You know, for $25, they could get an actual copy of the printed book that I would sign. Now, I'm not sure if that's worth anything. At $50, you know, there was a prize level at $200, which is where we maxed it. Now, a lot of Kickstarter projects will offer $1,000 rewards and stuff all the way up to $5,000. We stopped it at $200, and they could get a backpack that hopefully could be used to fill with items and go help the homeless, which is what our story is largely about.
Yeah.
In addition to the bookmark, the book, prints, original prints that were created for the book. So we wanted to offer enticing rewards that maybe people, you know, if those people who are looking for some kind of physical return, it was there. We were surprised to see that there were quite a few people who opted out of those just to support the project.
Oh, that was going to be my next question is, you know, clearly in the case of a micro lending service like Kiva, the incentive is community based. There's not that necessarily that physical return back to the person who's giving. In this case, do you think the incentives worked, or did you really need them?
I think they work on a very, you know, at different levels. Mm-hmm. I think you have individuals who use Kickstarter that don't know me, don't know my family, don't have any personal connection to the project. They're probably looking for some kind of reward. A lot of our backers were friends, family. Our network was very good about sharing it. So a lot of those individuals, I don't think the rewards really mattered. Now, I think most of them love the idea of getting the book. And we had a lot of people donate at the $25 level to get the book. And hopefully then they'll be able to share it with their children and hopefully pull the lesson out of the book together.
With that project, did you see more small donors, you know, $5, $10, or was it a mixture across? You had a range, I think, from what, $1 up to $200.
Yeah, we had almost 140 total backers to help us get to that $5,200 mark. I think on average, the average donation was around $45. But we saw, you know, I think we had six people give at the $200 level, and we had a number give at the $5 level. That's what makes it great, is that it's whatever you can do. Mm-hmm. If you want to give $5, if you want to give $1, for the person who puts the project out there, every little bit helps, because again, if you don't reach your target, you get nothing. So, you know, every dollar really helps. So we really saw a varying range of donations.
We want to hear from our listeners today. If you have any advice about crowdsourcing your fundraising, 260-452-1185. We'd love to hear your questions and comments this hour by emailing middaymatters@nipr.fm. You can always call us, 800-471-9264. And, of course, our Facebook wall and our Twitter feed, both up as well. Susan.
Indeed. And I see on our Twitter feed, Aaron has friends.
a little bit of activity.
Yeah, thankfully I do, because a lot of those friends are the ones who supported the project. So,
yeah. excuse me. As you were putting this together, how did you get that word out? Did you use the Twitter feed? Did you, like, everywhere you turned, go to Kickstarter because I've got a project up?
Yeah, I mean, that's where you get concerned as being the person who putting the project out there, is because I don't want to be a me monster. You know, I don't want it to be about me, and it's very difficult to say, hey, I need your help. I need your help with money. And I'm sure the people who followed me on Twitter, the people who I'm connected with on Facebook, probably got sick of seeing it, because I did put it out there usually a couple times a day. Where we were very fortunate was that our friends, our family, that they shared it, that they were personally calling and emailing people in their networks, that really made it successful. But yeah, we used a lot of social media, and then we used our blog, our impact52.org blog, to share the messages and put a link to the Kickstarter project there as well.
Great. When you went to sign up with Kickstarter, did you what kinds of terms and conditions did they ask of you? You said you have to hit that goal level.
Well, there's a lot of rules, and you know, and so anyone who's considering a Kickstarter project, you need to do your homework and understand. Actually, Kickstarter offers a Kickstarter school that, with, you know, frequently asked questions and a lot of things that, you know, the guidelines, because in our instance, you know, our Impact 52 project, it's not a nonprofit, but we volunteer every week with a different organization, and we share the experiences through our blog. I had put in my bio on Kickstarter about Impact 52 and what our mission was and what we were trying to do. And ultimately, Kickstarter delayed us launching our project because it was too cause-based. I was basically asked to remove a lot of the language about Impact 52 in the bio and make it more about the book itself. Only reason I put it on there originally was to give people the story behind the story, to really create some credibility on why I'd be writing a book about volunteerism and homelessness. But Kickstarter saw it as, you know, potentially too cause-driven, and so they made me make some changes.
I want to talk a little bit later in the program about some of the stumbles and pitfalls of this style of fundraising too. It's exploded in the last few years, but certainly still finding its footing among certain folks and just more broadly speaking. We were talking over the break, though, guys, about how in both cases, both of your cases with Kiva and with Kickstarter, it was a lot about building community, whether or not those physical returns are there. And Tom, maybe you can expand on that point just a little bit, that folks who are involved with a service, say a microlending service, say like Kiva, it's not necessarily about the money.
It definitely is not in the case of Kiva. There is no real tangible return for people who, quote, invest into Kiva. But I think there's a lot of people that see us as one big world. And they see that if we don't begin to solve our problems as one world, then we're in major difficulties. And if you search out root causes for just about anything that happens in the world, you'll find economic oppression somewhere in there. And so a lot of people feel that you need to address that. And it, you can't, if you sit around and wait for governments, excuse me, if you sit around and wait for your governments to do that, it may well be too late. And it's interesting that this phenomena of the internet has very effectively broke down those international boundaries. I can make a loan to someone in Afghanistan with a click of a button. I can help. I can send real, tangible help to that person, you know, and that person is a real person. I made a loan one time to an individual in Africa. It's one of the few loans that were not repaid. And the reason it was not repaid was that the woman was killed in one of the uprisings. So this is it's the way Kiva does this. You really understand what's happening in these people's lives. And it makes us more feel like they're more of a neighbor. They're part of the community. You know how in the old days, how community just seemed to be the next person on the block, you know? And now we have a world that we really need that block needs to be expanded considerably. And I think that this kind of involvement helps expand that feeling. And it touches you in a very real way.
Aaron, I know you wanted to jump in.
Yeah, I just wanted to add to that. I mean, with all giving comes receiving. And so anytime you give, whether it's dollars or time, you receive. And whether or not Tom's not getting a financial return, but the feelings of fulfillment of knowing that you're helping your neighbor, someone on the other side of the world, and it's self-development. I mean, when you give, you receive, regardless if it's a Kiva loan, if it's volunteering your time at the local food bank, if it's just helping your neighbor mow their lawn because they physically can't do it themselves. And so there's always a return when we give of ourselves to others.
Aaron, in your case, I know not all Kickstarter projects are this way. And in your case, your project was a kind of a community-based advocacy or form of advocacy. Were a lot of the folks who invested in your project members of this community or a broader community that liked your idea, liked Impact 52?
We had great support from the local community. Also from communities where I've lived in the past, where I grew up. And we had support from all over the world. I mean, with our Impact 52 project, we've reached over 85 countries with our blog post. So we have received emails from Norway and the Barbados and all over. And so some of those people even supported the project as well. Maybe not necessarily dollar-wise, but they also shared it through Twitter, through Facebook. I mean, so we saw support worldwide, but I would say most of the dollars came more from the local community, family members, and close friends.
And Tom, I see a knowing nod over there.
Oh, very much so. It's incredible. One of the things you can do in Kiva is that you can join groups. And so there's companies form up groups of donators, different churches form up donators. I happen to be a member of the Baha'i Faith, and I belong to the Baha'i Faith one. We started out, I was the number two person that joined that group. We're now up to about 130 people, and 130 people, of that 130, half of them are outside of the United States. Hmm. So when you talk about, I'm an older person now, and I say, I look for like-minded people, and the internet gives you that ability to find those like-minded people. And it's easy. You just put up here's what I think, here's what I believe, here's what I'm trying to do. And all of a sudden, you're getting input from people from all around the world. And you find out that you're not this little island,
I know there are a number of other Kiva groups, other micro-lending groups in Fort Wayne as well. And we'd love to hear from them this hour. If you have any advice on how you do it or maybe how you raise funds, 260-452-1185, toll free at 800-471-9264. Looks like we have a caller on the line before we have to go to a break here. Let's open up the phones and go to Daniel. Daniel, good afternoon. You're on the program.
Yes, good afternoon. So I've looked at Kickstarter and similar ones. I have not looked at Kiva, though I do like the concept of microloans and that being for developing nations where you also hear about appropriate technology. But appropriate technology can also fit in the industrialized world where I've considered Kickstarter and others to look at the renewable anhydrous ammonia as fuel and energy storage medium. I looked at the Kickstarter and similar ones because I was thinking, well, what might it take? But I had not ever actually put the project on those sites because of some of the partial ownership conditions. And with the scale of money that it would require to make the kind of project I'm looking at actually work, it would take very large sums of money in the scale of numbers of billions, in that a single right-scaled ammonia plant would be $500 million, but even that is a better price than previous ones. So it's like...
And Kickstarter may not be prepared for that kind of server traffic yet.
Either that or the folks who can move that scale of money may not like the idea of having Kickstarter have been involved, because they might want to say, well, it's nice to have the information out there, but maybe we want to really have everything buttoned down in a very detailed plan on how to do it, as compared to, Kickstarter might not be prepared for that kind of scrutiny and direction.
And we do need to take just a quick break here, but Daniel, we appreciate the call. And when we return, we're going to talk about some of the limitations of these services as well. So
Sure. Thanks
for the segue. We appreciate
it. Yes, thank you.
All right, bye-bye. 260-452-1185. Toll-free, 800-471-9264. Of course, you can always email us, middaymatters@nipr.fm. or post on our Facebook wall or send us a tweet. Stay with us. We'll be back in 4 minutes.
The next Fresh Air, the new Christian evangelical adoption movement that promotes adoption as a way of fulfilling a biblical mandate. It's sending tens of thousands of evangelicals overseas to adopt, but the children aren't always really orphans. We'll talk with Catherine Joyce about her new book, The Child Catchers, Rescue, Trafficking, and the New Gospel. Join us this afternoon at 1 here on WBOI.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Northeast Indiana Public Radio. I'm Sarah D'Elia with WBOY News. After a first unsuccessful try, the Indiana House on Monday passed legislation investing state dollars in the Indianapolis Motor Speedway and the state's motorsports industry. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Brandon Smith has more on that story.
The original Senate bill was aimed solely at providing financial support to the Indianapolis Motor Speedway for much-needed improvements at the track. The House broadened the measure to include the state's entire motorsports industry. Crawfordsville Republican Tim Brown says expanding the bill's reach will affect the districts of just about every House member.
91 out of 92 counties have motorsports touching them. There's over 1,600 businesses. There's over 23,000 employees out there.
The bill sends $5 million a year to the Motor Speedway, with that money taken from increased tax revenue at the track. It also invests $5 million in the statewide motorsports industry. Huntington Republican Dan Leonard says that money, which the motorsports industry didn't request, could be better spent.
And we're going to put $5 million a year into a fund to help people that haven't even asked for it. And what about the pre-kindergarten kids?
The bill failed to garner a constitutional majority on its first vote Monday, with only 47 House members voting for it, with 46 opposed. 51 members are required to pass legislation. On a second attempt later in the day, the measure earned 56 aye votes. It is expected to go to conference committee for the House and Senate to work out their differences. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Brandon Smith.
The Indiana House has passed a bill making tax changes to help the state's struggling casinos amid greater competition from neighboring states, but the debate over casino legislation is far from over. The House voted 73-17 to advance the bill Monday. That sets up what could be complicated negotiations with the Senate over the next 2 weeks before this year's legislative session ends. Representative Sean Eberhardt of Shelbyville urged representatives to vote for the bill, even though he said he would keep pushing for the state to allow live table games at the two horse track casinos in Anderson and Shelbyville. The Senate approved that step, but House leaders took that provision out, since some consider that an expansion of gambling in the state. And Indianapolis authorities are reviewing security for the upcoming 500 Festival Mini Marathon following explosions at the Boston Marathon. The Indianapolis Homeland Security Director says the city already had a plan in place for the May 4th event that includes sweeping cars and areas with bomb detection dogs, but security officials will update it as necessary following the Boston blast Monday. The Indianapolis race attracts more than 35,000 runners. A mini marathon spokeswoman says organizers will definitely be on heightened awareness. Initial reports said that the Boston blast killed two people and injured many others. About 280 runners from Indiana were registered for the Boston Marathon. The NBA's Indiana Pacers released a statement saying everyone in the team's travel party was accounted for. The Pacers were in Boston for a game Tuesday. You're listening to 89.1 FM, WBOY Fort Wayne. Now back to Midday Matters.
This is Midday Matters on WBOY. I'm Sean Beter, along with Susan Burns. And this hour, we're talking about new ways of fundraising, particularly this hour, crowdsourcing the funds that you need. We want to hear from lenders and from those who raised funds as well. 260-452-1185, toll free at 800-471-9264. Or you can always email middaymatters@nipr.fm. Of course, our social media pages are up this hour, Facebook and Twitter as well. Susan.
Which is appropriate since we're talking about crowdsourcing.
That's right.
That's a pretty social sort of thing. Sean, during the break, we got into a discussion about the practical considerations as you think about which one to go with and how you set up your request and things like that. And Tom and Aaron got really into the details of it. So let's pick up, Aaron, with some of what you were saying about how you structured your request to Kickstarter. There are some thoughts you had to put into how you put that request together.
Well, yeah. I mean, you start trying to figure out what your goal is going to be or what your target's going to be. I mean, knowing that it's an all or none platform, you want to be very realistic in the goal. I had a few people that I know that have used Kickstarter in the past that were telling me to set a really low target to guarantee that I got money and then hopefully far surpass that. You know, I looked at it and thought, well, it doesn't do me a whole lot of good to raise a number that's not going to help me achieve my goal at the end of the day. So we put a lot of thought into what is that number? What do we truly need? And then trying to come up with kind of a marketing campaign on how we can share it. Because again, when you're building your target, you have to take into account fees.
Yeah.
So Kickstarter takes 5%. They use Amazon and Amazon payments to collect all of the pledges, which is another 3-5%, depending on where you are in the world. So for us, it was another 5%. So ultimately, 10% of the funds raised, you know, went away. So if we set a low goal and then you hit it and then you lose 10% of a low goal, I mean, you're not very close to where you need to be as far as to fund the project.
I want to talk a little bit, if we can, about some of the limitations on these services, both from the lender side and from the fundraiser side, because as widespread as they've become, and as almost mainstream for a lot of things as they've become, there are still limitations. Aaron, I want to start with you, and we'll move to Tom as well. When you were setting this up, did you have to shop services? I know that Kickstarter is good for a lot of things. We see some TV shows are now raising money for some movies. Again, like we mentioned, public radio programs. Your book, of course, those are more. It seemed to be more artistic projects.
Yes.
did you have to shop around and did you see different personalities for different sites?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I didn't probably shop around as much as maybe I should have. I was aware of Kickstarter. I had known some people who had used it for particular projects. I looked into Indiegogo because it can be cause-based. Mm-hmm. And, you know, again, you know, what we do at Impact 52, it's about volunteerism and driving awareness around the power of giving and giving your time. So we looked at Indiegogo as potentially being an option. I know Founders, which is a great co-working space here in Fort Wayne, that they did a, you know, Indiegogo campaign. There's been a number of local people that have used that successfully. Mm-hmm. I like that idea because it was going to allow me to really share our Impact 52 message. As I did the research, though, I started to realize that Kickstarter, from a creative standpoint, that there were a lot of, I mean, I think when I put my project up, there were 500 and some other publishing projects out there.
Wow.
So if someone was going looking for a project to support, you know, from a lot of the research, it seemed that Kickstarter was a better way from a book standpoint than to go. Now, if I want to raise money for my Impact 52 project or yeah, you have a family member who, you know, comes down with an illness and you want to raise money to help cover their expenses, Indiegogo would be a great place to go because it can be cause-based.
Daniel raised some concerns, not only about the amount of money that he would have to raise for his project, but also about ownership concerns. Were there ever any concerns that you had with Kickstarter or when you were looking at Indiegogo, actually, about whether or not it was your intellectual property at the end of the day?
From a Kickstarter standpoint, I mean, it states clearly that, you know, I keep 100% of the creative of the project. Mm. You know, other than them taking, you know, their 5% fee, the project was mine. Yeah, there's a screening process. So when you put your project out there, they look through it to make sure it meets, you know, all of the guidelines that they set forth. But at no time would they have ever taken any ownership in the product and the project itself.
Tom, let's turn to you. In terms of your lending with Kiva, your involvement with Kiva and microlending, have you had any disappointments with either the breadth of the service or the way the service and others like it really have to do business?
I think I probably lucked out because Kiva, I got in on the ground floor of an organization that actually worked, you know. I didn't know that at the time, but it really actually worked. When you go in to Kiva, you were talking about lending for different purposes. You can go in and you can say, I want to support somebody in retail, or I want to support somebody in on clothing or services or agriculture. I've donated to people that are in all those different categories. I've also donated to people that are for art kind of things or transportation. Now, in terms of raising $500 million to start an industrial complex someplace, no, that's not what Kiva is about. But you know, when you plant those seeds in a community, when you plant those seeds and you create a better grocery, or even a better, I've lend money to women that wanted to do a beautician's thing, okay? You plant those little seeds in communities, and it's from those growths that the bigger stuff comes. So if you're looking at, you know, changing the world overnight by this, by some big, glorious investment in, I don't know, fusion.
Dropping Bill Gates kind of money on,
exactly,
on a different,
yeah.
different products.
Yeah, let Bill Gates take care of this. This is an excellent place to start to plant those seeds. And it's, you know, it's like you go out in the springtime and you cast grass seed, those just little tiny things. And then you look out there a couple of months later and there's a whole green thing there. And that's the way I kind of see the Kiva thing. And it doesn't really transition into this thing of intellectual property and who owns the rights and all this. This is really very fundamental, very, very fundamental seeding.
It looks like we have a question here on our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/middaymatters. Doug says, does Kiva work in Haiti? We have a microloan business for women to start business. We also support local artists to market their goods over the internet. The group is called Haitian Artists for Peace International. And this is a good question. I mean, do services, I mean, let's say like Kiva, have limits in terms of the countries they can operate in, or the types of folks or even types of businesses that they can help support?
They do have limitations, and I can't answer that question, but if he goes on Kiva.org and just types in Haiti, you'll find out if he can make a loan in Haiti. I've seen some countries, like only recently were they able to do work in Afghanistan, in Iraq, and part of that has to do with being able to have a partner that is capable of functioning there. So Kiva in and of itself, without its partners, can't really lend.
You're talking about a functional loan servicer, basically.
Exactly,
in that country.
Located in that country. So I'm sorry I can't answer that question, but just go up on Kiva.org, type in Haiti, and you'll find out whether or not there's any loans that are active in Haiti, or if they can make loans to that country.
We need to take just a quick break here. Then we'll open the phones. We'll have a call from Lisa. Lisa, I hope you'll stay with us. In the meantime, I hope you'll get in touch as well in the last few minutes of the program. 260-452-1185. Facebook.com is open, Twitter as well, and you can always email us middaymatters@nipr.fm. Stay with us. It's Midday Matters.
The Next Fresh Air, the new Christian evangelical adoption movement that promotes adoption as a way of fulfilling a biblical mandate. It's sending tens of thousands of evangelicals overseas to adopt, but the children aren't always really orphans. We'll talk with Catherine Joyce about her new book, The Child Catchers, Rescue, Trafficking, and the New Gospel. Join us this afternoon at 1 here on WBOI.
Support for this program on WBOI is provided by Lake City Bank, offering a range of financial investment and trust services for individuals, businesses, and nonprofit organizations through the Lake City Bank Wealth Advisory Group. Details at lakecitybank.com.
Support for this program on WBOI is provided by Reinbold and Anderson, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC. Plan to retire on your terms. More information on Reinbold and Anderson on the web at reinboldandanderson.com.
Minutes before the top of the hour, 1 o'clock, it's Midday Matters on 89.1 FM. Looks like we have a caller on the line here. Let's open the phones and go to Lisa. Lisa, good afternoon. You're on the program.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I was calling in regard to QuickStarter. I watch a regular YouTube program. Well, it's a channel that this duo does. Anyway, they decided to pick a Kickstarter program that they liked and to help, you know, kind of get this guy to get the money for his project. And because of that, his project, which really hadn't gained very much interest at all, was able to get the money that it needed within like a week of when they told their viewers, like, you know, if you guys are interested in this, go and do it. So I guess my suggestion is if you could find someone who already has an online community presence, maybe to partner with them, that it could, you know, potentially help your Kickstarter idea.
A fantastic idea, it sounds like. And Aaron, I mean, even if we're pursuing these non-traditional ways or new ways of fundraising, you still have to be a savvy marketer.
You're a marketer. You're a salesperson. You have to do that. We were fortunate enough through some of my Twitter contacts that in the last few hours of our project, which we were right on the doorstep, we had a published author who has 290-some thousand followers on Twitter tweet out our Kickstarter project. And so how much of our final dollars came from that, I don't know. But it's definitely about using your network, networking with people who, you know, who can get the word out for you. So, yeah, if you can connect with someone who has a following and they're willing to share the project, I mean, you're only going to be successful in the end.
Lisa, we appreciate the call. Thanks very much. Guys, just a few minutes here left in the program. I want to put it to both of you, and Tom, we'll start with you. You've seen microlending grow in tremendous ways in the last 10-ish years now, the last decade or so. Where do you hope it goes? Where do you see it going? What would you like to see come up next in your investment window?
Things start out, we always talk about we live in an age where things go exponential, but it's where you are on that curve. And yes, it's increased dramatically over 10 years, but now we're in the really interesting part of that curve. So to look and see something like Kiva with 500,000 out there, what if that was 10 billion? What is the impact on the world as a result of that? And that's what I think we're going to see in the future.
More and more people involved.
More
money
involved. Yes, absolutely.
Aaron, I'll put the same question to you about Kickstarter. Well, would you do a project this way again?
Yeah, I mean, I absolutely would. I hope that with the support of everyone who backed our first book, that when we get it printed and we get sales, that I will be able to fund the next 12 or 15 stories that I plan to write as far as children's stories, that we'll be able to fund those on our own, that we won't need to use it. But the experience for me was very good. And the thing is need will never go away. You know, as individuals, we always can positively impact other people, whether it's making a Kiva loan to someone in a country on the other side of the world, or supporting a local entrepreneur or someone who just has a dream to put together a project. So,
what additional possibilities just in the last few seconds here did you see or experience as you were setting this project up?
Well, it allowed me to connect with a lot of people who share similar passion. It allowed me to connect with other children's authors who are using Kickstarter and kind of talk about how we can collaborate on helping each other raise our goals. And it really just shows that, you know, people want to do good. People want to do good. They just need to know how they can find it and how they can get involved. And I think that any type of micro lending shows that's the case.
All right. Well, we'll have to have you guys on in the next few years to see where it's all going. Unfortunately, we've reached the end of this edition of Midday Matters. Tom Butler, thank you very much for being with us on the program today. Aaron Brown from Impact 52, we appreciate you being here as well.
Thank you.
Susan Burns, thanks very much for riding shotgun on this edition of our program.
Thank you. I learned a lot, Sean, and looking forward to next week.
And thanks so much to our listeners for joining in the conversation and for tuning in this hour. I'm Sean Beter, and this is Northeast Indiana Public Radio, broadcasting from the Matt Rothschild Studios at 89.1 FM HD Channel 1 and online at nipr.fm. This is WBOI Fort Wayne and WBKE North Manchester, a service of Manchester University. Stay with us. Fresh Air with Terry Gross is up next, and your local host, Katie Anderson, will be here in just a few moments. Have a great day, everybody.